Hello, what have we here?
Everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 47. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Shmee Skywalker. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello, everyone.
That was a little delayed, Danya, but that's okay. And we also have Ben on this week. How you doing, Ben?
Hey, good. How are you guys?
Pretty good. It's your first time on the show, so we're going to find out some information about you in a minute. And we also have Caitlin back again this week. How you doing, Caitlin?
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Are you French Canadian?
No.
No, you just want to be. Okay. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook. Send us an email through our website at resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hiveable.com. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio, with over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. We also have t-shirts and buttons up for sale on our website. Check them out. I'm the one shipping them out very quickly. Anyway, Ben, welcome. How you doing?
Good, thank you. This is super fun. I'm excited.
I know. We're excited. And we've been talking before the show. But so tell us a little about your love for Star Wars. What got you in here?
Yeah.
Your love for Star Wars. You know, was it like a movie with your dad? What was it? Tell us about young Ben.
Let's see. I'm quite a bit younger than my fellow co-hosts. when Phantom Menace came out, I was little and my dad wanted my brother and I to see the originals, of course, you know, because he was excited. So we watched A New Hope, Empire, and Jedi. And then I think I saw Phantom Menace when it came out on VHS. Woohoo! And so the movies were really kind of the starting point. And then, of course, you know, Lego got the licensing. And then, you know, we bought as many as we could and played with them. And every single game outside involved Star Wars. So I think it was just kind of this integral part of childhood. Attack of the Clones was my first Star Wars movie in theaters, which is awesome. And then Revenge of the Sith was my first PG-13 movie in theaters, which was a huge deal. And then it was just like, well, there's six of them. That's it. It's done, you know? And it was just this huge, like, part of my childhood. And then, you know, that fateful day in 2012 when they said there would be more, I think it was just amazing for all of us that it was actually going to happen.
it was such a good day.
Yeah. And then, so Force Awakens at midnight was a huge thing. And I think there were like five screenings in the theater at the same time. So there were five separate lines going out the door. Everyone was dressed up. Like, it was kind of everything our parents told us that the original was, but for us this time, which was kind of cool. And that's, you know, last Christmas was kind of incredible because of that.
It's just blowing my mind a little bit that this trilogy, this current trilogy of films, will be the first Star Wars trilogy that you will be experiencing start to finish in theaters.
That's true. I didn't think about that. That's cool.
Wow.
Hey, I mean, you know.
Did you see like the special edition in theaters, though?
When did that come out? That
was, you would have been just,
right?
A little too young.
I would have been small. Yeah, I would have been too young. The first time I ever saw Star Wars was the theatrical cuts. So I didn't see the,
the special edition. You had the CBS VHS tapes.
The one I saw was the one where Han shoots first. Like, that's okay. That was my first Star Wars experience. So
that's
like
good.
I was,
that's good. That's
good. That is very good.
It's very good. So I had a very good
But you didn't get to enjoy Jedi Rocks in Return of the Jedi. So
no, I'm but sorry. I remember going to Toys R Us the day they released the original trilogy on DVD, and like grabbing it and wanting to watch it really badly because they were the special editions. So having not seen them, I was really excited and then really disappointed.
They weren't all bad. Like, we really liked Empire Strikes Back. And New Hope,
Empire Strikes
Back, honestly,
is good.
Other than a few things, like, it's, other than the, you know, Jabba Han conversation, everything else in A New Hope's pretty good. I love the X-Wings, like, the CGI X-Wings they added, because I think it really makes that battle become more, you know, menacing.
Right.
Like, it's a bigger
feat.
But
At the end of Jedi, the way they end the movie, Because, like, now that we live in a post-Despicable Me Minions world, the original ending to
Banana.
Return of the Jedi sounded like all the minions singing. and now the new one is much more like, I don't know, they just brought in like a choir of normal voices. I don't know. Then they also added like what celebrations on Naboo and Coruscant and like all these prequel planets to kind of tie together the six movies, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, it was a good thing they add. Like I said, like the special editions, they don't add 100%. Like, I don't think they add that much. Like, again, Han shooting first. Don't know why that was ever changed, but you know, they do add some good things. Like we talked about Bespin. Just if you're living in a city among the clouds, you want windows everywhere. Right. So like it makes sense. All right, I think it's time for news. That was awesome, Ben. Thank you for sharing with us.
Oh my gosh, thank you for making me talk.
I know, right? Force you to get the pre-show jitters out of the way. Anyway,
yeah, sure.
First bit of news. This is something I'm super excited about, if I can speak today. Star Wars Land is going to open in 2019. Oh my God.
2019, though.
But you got to understand, at the end of the Star Wars saga, as soon as that, at the end of episode 9, or leading up to episode 9, the final chapter of this current Star Wars Skywalker saga will have Star Wars Land at Disney World and Disneyland.
But they have ruined my 30th birthday plans.
Well, you can like, probably
they
like,
see said.
Something.
2018.
Yeah, well, Bob Iger's like, nope, the 14-acre Star Wars land will be in 2019.
Sorry. I guess I'll have to go back again.
I know. Or you can go see it in California, where, like, Hollywood is and everything, and it might be, like, bigger than, you know, Disney World.
Are they opening two?
Yeah, they're opening them simultaneously. Disneyland and Disney World are both getting Star Wars Land. Like, I have pictures, which I think I've posted on our website at some point in time. I grew up near Disneyland in Southern California, and my mom still goes 2-3 times a week. Like, that's what she does, you know, just to hang out. And she took pictures, like, as they're building. She's like, look, there's the crane. They're doing something over there. You can't really see anything, but, like, you can see what they're doing. So, yeah, ground has been broken for it. So, I'm super excited for it. Just to give you an idea, there has been things like on the Disney Parks blog that guests will get an opportunity to pilot the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy, which is basically a life-size, full-size replica of the Millennium Falcon. How we're going to be able to pilot it, I don't know if it's VR or if it's going to be like a Star Tours thing, but I'm just excited to be able to take a picture in front of a full-size Millennium Falcon. Like,
I mean,
cool
you think
like,
you're
cool
going to be able to take a picture in front of it, but there's probably going to be a lot of people.
Who cares if there's a lot of people? We're going to be best friends. It's Star Wars. Like, come on. I'll hug all of them. Be like, come on. Everybody get into this picture. It's going to be, oh, man. Like, I'm just, you know what I really want? Like, have any of you guys been to Disneyland or Disney World, like, in the last couple of years?
Disneyland, but not Disney World.
Disney World 7 years ago?
Okay, well, regardless, like, if you've been, like, you know the ambience. Like, Disney does the ambience and everything better than any of the parks. Like, don't get me wrong, I love the Harry Potter lands at Universal, both in California and in Florida. And they do a really good job, like, all the people wearing, you know, the wizard robes and the Bobatons and everything. Like, but Disneyland, no matter where you're at, like, the, you know, the characters that are walking around, the people that are in there, like, it is the best out of any theme park I've ever been to is Disneyland Disney World. And I am just so excited to be immersed in a Star Wars land. Wait, can you imagine, like, just, like, alien characters? Like, I want to see a Mon Calamari just walking around, just, like, moving his shoulders and just walking. Like,
I mean, maybe a BB-8 running around.
Yeah, like,
that you can,
just,
like,
well, BB-8's already running around the parks. But, like, can you imagine, like, a Mon Cal taking, like, a spray bottle and be, like, like, spraying himself down because it's a hot day? Like, I think that would be, like, the coolest, like, funny thing ever. But that's just...
Are there any Force ghosts?
Only if Hayden Christensen's won.
I mean, he's out of a job for the last 10 years, so we need him in the parks.
I mean, the only time that I've ever been to Disney World, I went during Star Wars weekends. So they had, like, loads of, like, characters just walking around all of the time. So mm-hmm. I would imagine that it's going to be very much like that. Like, literally, So the first experience was, like, we came up to the park and we were going through the gates, and literally there were stormtroopers stood on the top of the gates as you were walking through. And they, like, were interrogating people, like, as they were walking through.
That's exactly it. Like, can you imagine that just being everywhere? Like, yeah. Stormtroopers. Like, it's going to be so great. Oh, man, I can't wait for Star Wars Land to open. Unfortunately, it is going to be opening 2019, not 2018 like we had hoped. Oh, well.
I suddenly have, like, because don't they, every once in a while, they'll do shows or parades and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Parades of Imperial guards and clones just...
I would love for them to recreate the the celebration parade at the end of Phantom Menace with that music and everything, and like the banners and everything. Like, that would just be so cool. Yeah, the glowing orbs. Like, it'd be awesome. Oh, man.
What are those called? Boobas?
Boombas.
Okay, very good.
Okay. As we're moving on,
I'm glad we got that cleared out.
Let's move on to some other news here. Yeah. So actually, something that I came across that I thought was really interesting was Bandai's new Star Wars model kits are ridiculously crazy detailed. Did you guys get a chance to take a look at the pictures that I linked to on this?
I am clicking now.
I did. Whoa. These are ridiculous,
right? And the really cool part about these are, like, from the reviews and everything, the kits are actually fairly easy to build. So, like, you don't have to be, like, a perfect, you know, model car builder or anything like that to be able to put these kits together. They're fairly easy to put together, and they're super detailed. Just to give an idea, they're 172nd scale. Of actual ships. So, like, there's a Y-Wing, there's a new wave of them that just they announced before Toy Fair, of a Y-Wing, TIE Fighter, Darth Vader's TIE, a 148th scale Snowspeeder and AT-ST Scout Walker, and a 144th scale AT-AT Slave One and Millennium Falcon Episode 7 version. So there's just some really cool things, and, like, the details on these things are just awesome. Like, I don't know about you guys, but if you buy any of the toys, like, I love buying the toys, but the details on them are kind of like, meh, they're okay. There's not really any scarring or anything on it, and you kind of almost want to just, like, paint it yourself. But, like, the Y-Wings that they have here just look absolutely amazing, and, oh, man, I love these. Like, I want to put them up, like, make a little diorama flooding over my computer of just, like, a space battle over my computer. But, yeah.
These look like you could shoot the movie with them.
Yeah, like, totally. Like, you could do, like, a short, you know, a little, like, you know, stop motion type film with it. Like, they look really good.
And they're not ridiculously expensive either.
No, they're really reasonable. I was just looking because in the pictures, I swear I can see an X-Wing there as well.
There is. There is. X-Wing is part of Series 1.
Yeah, so, well, give me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the X-Wing, the Y-Wing, let's see, Snowspeeder, TIE Fighters, and Darth Vader's TIE Fighter.
Chicken Walkers. Falcons,
no, yep. It's Slave One. You know, it's definitely kind of a cool thing to take a look. I will say, I'm actually super impressed with the AT-AT, how you can also lay it down like it was tripped up by the Snowspeeders. So you can, like, position it however you want. I don't know if I would position mine that way, but these are pretty cool.
It's the, like, I'm so done with today kind of look.
Yeah.
This is my life today.
I feel
today.
Like I could, like, put it down in the, like, snow in my backyard and pretend that, like, it really is Hoth.
No, that's exactly it. You can make your own, like, little diorama type photos and whatever. But we'll link to these in the show notes. They're definitely cool to take a look at. But they're all announced in before this week's coming toy fair that's happening. So they're definitely pretty cool model kits if you're into building models. If you're not, try it out. Tell us what you think about making them, because I will probably pick a couple of these up if I'm allowed to. Anyway, moving on. Guess what? Two new Star Wars films were announced this week, but not by Disney. Yeah, I know. I got you guys all excited for a second. So there's two new films about Star Wars that have been announced. The first one is called The Line Kings. It's a feature-length comedy written by producers Billy Ryback, who did Home Improvement, and Stephen J. Rubin, and directed by Tony Dow. This is going to be a comedy about people waiting in line in front of the Grauman's Chinese Theater. Or I guess it's not Grauman anymore. It's the TLC Chinese Theater in Hollywood to win a walk-on role to one of the Star Wars films. So I don't know if I'm excited about this type of film. We had Fanboys a couple of years ago. That was really good.
Yeah. I'm just really, really, really concerned because these kinds of films fall into one of two categories. That they either actually show the nuances of fan culture and how clever it can be and breaks out of this horrific stereotype that's perpetuated by stuff like Big Bang Theory and any kind of like show that will have a nerd in it of some kind, or it really plays into that idea where they're all like completely incapable of any kind of social interaction and they're like really, really, really terrible. And unfortunately, the team behind this are, and the like the little blurb of this sounds like it's gonna lean in the direction of more Big Bang Theory than anything else. And
well, this one I don't know how it'll turn out. Like, I'm not really excited about it, but I did like Home Improvement growing up, so I'm gonna hold a little hope for this one. But I will say I feel like this is more in the veins of like Fanboys that had like Kristen Bell and Jay Bruchel, which I love that film. Like I drove like I don't know if I told the story on the show at once, but it was only playing in Cincinnati when I moved to Louisville. So we literally drove 2 hours to Cincinnati to see it. We bought our tickets online and then the film hadn't arrived at the theater. Like they're like, oh, you guys have the tickets to that show. Yeah, we don't have the film yet. Like it hasn't arrived yet. And we're like, what? We drove 2 hours to get here. And they were all like super sad. So they refunded us our money. We were walking around and I'm like, well, do you guys want to go see another movie since we drove 2 hours? And we ended up walking back. They're like, dude, you guys, the film just got here. Do you want to watch the test screening? Like, cause we're not showing it till like 8 o'clock. And we're like, yeah. So we watched the test screening of the film. So we had our own like Fanboys type trip to go see the film. And I really enjoyed it, but the Lion King's, I don't know. We'll see.
That's really funny how you got to see it before other people, considering Fanboys is about seeing a movie before other people.
Yeah, that's true. That irony was not was lost on me originally. But the next
they should
film,
make a movie about your experience trying to see Fanboys as a Star Wars spoof.
That would just be horrible. It'd probably be as bad as the next film I'm about to talk about, which is called Star Worlds Episode XXIVE equals MC Square, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi Who Went Rogue. So not even the title is really funny to me, but it is by the same guys who did the Scary Movie franchise.
I was never
a fan of the Scary Movie franchise, honestly. The film I would rather see would be like Spaceballs 3, The Search for Spaceballs 2, or something like that, but that doesn't look to be happening anytime soon.
Only Star Wars spoof I ever want to see is Spaceballs, basically.
Spaceballs would be good, but yeah, I don't know about this one.
I unfortunately was forced to also watch a spoof called Thumb Wars.
Now, Thumb Wars was amazing. Like, if you like the Thumb Wars, like, and Bat Thumb and all those Thumb films were amazing. They were so bad. They were great. I will say this. The Thumb Wars was probably better than what Star Worlds will be.
But
you know what? We'll see. Like, maybe it'll be a surprise hit, but with the title even, like, the way it is, I'm just kind of like, it's trying too hard. Like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, they did, like, what, 5 scary movies, epic movie, Meet the Spartans, and Vampire Sucks. So between, like, those, what, 8 movies, there's probably, I don't know. I've watched a handful of them, like, probably when I shouldn't have.
Well, and those aren't, like, those aren't the kind of comedies I enjoy, so.
Yeah, I know, same here, so I don't know.
I think they're the kind of comedies that, like, 13-year-olds go to you know, because it's like that kind of humor.
Yeah,
where, like, it's not clever humor at all, but like it makes certain people laugh, and those certain people tend to be young teenagers. So, I don't know. That's usually that's what I got from the scary movies. Like whenever there was one on TV, I would be there for like 30 seconds and be like, no, it's not my thing.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Oh well, it's what it is. Those are coming out. You know, we'll keep you updated if they do anything that's worthwhile, maybe. Anyway, next bit of news is pretty cool. Humble Bundle, UNICEF, and Force of Change have teamed up to bring some PC, Mac, and Linux games at an awesome deal. So, have any of you guys ever done Humble Bundle before?
Yes. So it's I love Humble Bundle.
They're great. You kind of get to pay whatever you want, and you get games for it. So you could pay $1, one penny if you want. I don't recommend just paying one penny. It goes to a good cause. But if you pay whatever you want, you can get Star Wars The Old Republic, Star Wars X-Wing Alliance, Star Wars X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter, Balance of Power Campaigns, and Star Wars Galactic Battleground Saga. So that's the pay what you want. All those are Windows games, with the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic being a Mac game also. But if you pay more than the average of $10.51, you also unlock Star Wars Battlefront 2, Star Wars Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, Star Wars Starfighter, Star Wars The Knights of the Old Republic 2, The Sith Lords, and Star Wars Rebel Assault 1 and 2. So you just pay $10.51 or more and you get that. But there's more. If you pay $14 or more, you also unlock Star Wars The Force Unleashed, Ultimate Sith Edition, Star Wars Force Unleashed 2, Star Wars Rogue Squadron 3D, Star Wars Shadow of the Empire, it's the debut for Windows PC, which I am doing this because I want to play Shadows of the Empire, and Star Wars Empires at War. But if you pay $35 or more, you get all of the stuff we mentioned and a really cool X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter t-shirt. And all of this goes to support Force for Change and UNICEF, or supports UNICEF in behalf of Star Wars Force for Change. What do you guys think about that bundle?
Yes, I mean, also, I use a Mac, so for me, if I was to just stay in native Mac OS, I would only be able to play, like, one or two of the games, but my Windows partition, then I could play all of them,
yeah, but so you can a play lot of the time I'm Mac too partition. Lazy. Yeah, there's four for Mac side there, yeah. Some. I'm super excited for this. I personally am beyond stagged that they're porting Shadows of the Empire over. Get to play as Dash Rendar. Oh, man. There's the theme for this. Like,
if I'm wrong, are none of these canon anymore?
None of these are canon. That is true.
Yeah, because they discontinued all the... That stinks.
Yeah, none of these are canon. But I will say some of these have some amazing story, like Knights of the Old Republic and Knights of the Old Republic 2. Which we've talked about how Darth Revan, because of the Darksaber and the battle between Mandalorians and the Jedi, was something that was mentioned in canon. So maybe the games will be retroactively added back in. Who knows? But I will say...
I mean, like, out of all of them, those ones are the most likely to be added back in.
Yeah, because they don't affect the current storyline at all. Yeah. Rebel Assault, you're rookie one flying through the Death Star Trench, and you're the one that takes the shot. So I don't think that's going to
that
be...
That would suck if you weren't the one who takes the shots.
you're all clear, Luke. Go ahead and shoot it. No, you're rookie one.
Wow, that game was fun. Luke.
No, but I'm super excited for Shadows of the Empire, which obviously takes place between Empire and Return of the Jedi. You play Dash Rendar. You get to fly in the same ship that Iron Squadron has. You know, they use the same model ship that they had. So that, you know, it's a pretty cool bundle. I'm excited for it. I may end up doing the t-shirt because I like the t-shirt too, the X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter.
It is a pretty sweet looking t-shirt. I like the split design, and you've got the TIE Fighters and then the X-Wings on the other side, and it's literally the split.
Rebel and Empire
between
logo.
The Rebel. Yeah.
It's pretty rad. I will say I'm pretty excited about this. So definitely check out Humble Bundle. We'll link to it in our show notes on our website and on hypeable.com. Take a look at it. Support a good cause in UNICEF. And the last bit of news, with everyone's favorite holiday coming up. No, I don't mean Life Day. I mean Valentine's Day. Make sure you share your favorite downloadable Star Wars Valentine with your sweetheart, best friend, droid, Wookiee, whatever. And some of these Valentines are just absolutely amazing. Tanya, I know we were talking about some of these earlier. I will say one of my favorite ones is it's a picture of Ben Solo holding out some flowers, and it says, "I've been Solo for too long. Will you be my Valentine?" So I'm personally a fan.
I just threw up a little bit.
Oh, that's my favorite too.
Yeah, that one's great. I love that one.
That one's so funny.
There's a whole set in that one. There's a Poe one that I really liked by them, where it's like, "FN her, I'ma call you fine Valentine." And I'm like, oh my god, yes! This is the greatest thing to ever happen to me. And the Finn one is then, "I'd go back to Jakku for you." And I'm like, this is great. I like
that one. There's also some action figure ones, which I'm a fan of. My favorite action figure one is Han and Leia holding the sweet hearts, you know, the conversation hearts, and the conversation bubbles read with Leia saying, "I love you." And then Han says, "There's not a conversation heart that says, 'I know.'" And then she says, "You think," because, you know, there's a "I love you" heart, but no, I know, which is very fan favorite one here.
I like the one with Anakin. It says, "I love you more than I hate sand."
I like the one of Luke just staring out. "I'm only looking at you." Very bad funs.
Oh,
bad funs, if you will. But yeah, these are great. Finn, yeah. "Hey Valentine, you got a boyfriend? Cute boyfriend? Back home? No." There's also another Poe one that I don't know if you saw.
It's
Poe in his X-Wing outfit, and he's holding up his jacket that Finn wears. It says, "My jacket and I both suit you, Valentine." And he's kind of holding the jacket up. Oh my god!
I love that one!
And then you forgot where Chewie's hugging Maz.
Yeah, you're amazing.
Yep.
There's a great real one. Says, "Here's a quarter portion and my whole heart. Show me the power of the dark side again, Valentine, and I'll finish what you started."
Oh dear. Where was the other one? I actually really like the one that goes with the Anakin one, which is like, "I love you more than I hate sand." There's an Obi-Wan one that goes with that, and it just says, "Let's get uncivilized, Valentine."
There's a couple interesting ones here, too. There's one of Han Solo says, "Do you want to be my worshipfulness? I'll be your scoundrel." And then there's also a Slave Leia one that says, "I'll be a slave for you. Don't worry. There will be no strangling." You know, kind of the... You know,
I mean, unless that's what you're into.
Well, that's, you know, it's a Jabba thing, you know. "Will you be my Valentine? Don't say C-3P no." It's C-3P up there.
There's another one. "You're the Obi-Wan for me."
Oh, God. These are great. "I find your lack of love disturbing. Do you want to be my Valentine?"
Oh man, there's one from the cantina that says, "He doesn't like you. I don't like you either."
No, you see, below that one, though, is the best one. It's a picture of Luke and Leia, which is pretty bad. "If loving you is wrong, I don't want to be right," which is really wrong. So these are all downloadable. I will tell you, I saved all these to my phone because guess what? On Valentine's Day, everybody's getting Star Wars Valentine's texted to them. So definitely check them out. We'll link to them. So this episode will be out before Valentine's Day, so you can do like me and save them all, because come on, who doesn't want to send Star Wars Valentine's to your best friend? Lover, whatever you have, Wookiee.
Yeah. Wookiee.
And apparently your enemy if you want to send the "He doesn't like you, I don't like you either."
I was trying to figure out like what the affection in that one was, and I was like, there really isn't any.
Not at all. They're all good. Like, I like them all. Like, I don't know. Valentine's Day is an interesting holiday. But yeah. Anyway, yeah. Moving on to our spotlight topic. All right. Shmi Skywalker Lars. All right. Let's get into this real quick. So real quick, she is the mother of Anakin Skywalker. Was also a brave and resilient woman who survived life as a slave to become a Tatooine moisture farmer. Shmi surrendered her son to the Jedi Order at a much older age than normal, putting him on a path to become one of the greatest Jedi. Her death at the hands of the Tusken Raiders became a critical step in Anakin's journey to the dark side. So just a quick kind of overview of what we know about Shmi Skywalker. So Shmi is this one of these interesting characters. She's like kind of like reminds me of when we talked about Watto on an episode a long time ago. Just because we really don't see her too much in the film. She shows up in episode one for a decent amount of time. And then we see her a little bit in Attack of the Clones, really just to die in Anakin's arms, which is really kind of heart-wrenching. Like, I don't know if you guys, like, remember her death. Like, you see her, like, he's like, Annie, is that you? I knew you'd come back. And then she dies. And then Anakin gets all angry and, you know, slaughters all the people. But, like, she really is kind of an interesting character. Especially considering that she was a slave her entire life, and she essentially was impregnated by the Force, the Metachlorians, and had no father. What do you guys think about that as a beginning, like, kind of start off? Like, she said there is no father. What would you do if you were a slave and that kind of happened? No one? Okay.
Wow.
Maybe it's just tough questions I'm asking tonight.
Just start off with a tough one. They all get easier.
Okay, well, yeah, all right, fine. All right, let's move on then. How about this? So, what do you think her relationship with Watto was? Like, we see Anakin helping Watto in the store, fixing things, stuff like that. Obviously, Shmi doesn't have the same technical expertise that Anakin did. But when Anakin left, you know, did she end up doing more? Like, she was at home when Anakin brought, you know, Padme and Qui-Gon and Jar Jar back to his home. Where was Shmi? Like, is Watto just, like, letting her be, like, a stay-at-home mom when she's a slave? What do you guys think?
No, absolutely not. Watto was not ever going to let her just be a stay-at-home mom. He's basically there for the profit. So if Anakin was doing more technical stuff, then she was obviously going to be doing other stuff as well. Like, that's not... Come on. She was a slave. She wasn't free under Watto, so she was basically at his service, whatever that is. So,
whatever that is, you know, and that's what I want to elaborate on. What do you guys think that was? You know, for me, I feel like maybe she was more like the stay-at-home mom, and she ended up maybe doing like housekeeping and stuff like that for Watto, just because you between like you know A New Hope or not A New Hope. Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, you see Watto become way more, you know, disheveled, not as clean shaven, a little more, you know, downbeaten, if you will. And maybe that's because Shmi's not there to go ahead and, you know, clean his hovel, his home, or whatever he's got in. Make sure he's got a fresh razor in there so that stubble doesn't grow back. And, you know, I don't know. What do you guys think?
See, I thought that was mostly because he wasn't living the easy life that he had become accustomed to through being able to use Anakin's skills in order to make him money. So I kind of figured it was just the inevitable consequence of losing that income in that he was becoming slightly more desperate and therefore kind of, yeah, it just all started to crumble around him. That's how I saw that, because I don't think that Shmi was, like, shaving him and stuff.
Okay. I don't, but can you imagine that? Him flapping his wing? And then, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, what she would do, though, because, like, obviously, you're right. Well, she's not just a stay-at-home mom.
I always saw, like, his whole disheveled state in Attack of the Clones is, like, I thought that was always associated with him, like, losing Anakin, because hadn't he, like, never lost before because he cheats?
Yeah.
So yeah. I feel like
that's how
you know,
that's how he won Anakin in the first place.
Yeah, and so he loses like the one kid who's like, you know, Anakin's like probably the most special slave he's ever had. And then this Jedi comes along and takes him away like it was nothing. You know, I don't know. I feel like that would really, I don't know, mess him up a little bit. Just because that's like his whole everything was dependent on Anakin, because he would make him race. He would make him, I don't know, come to the shop. Like, the first time we see Shmi is, like, at home. You know, she's already home.
And that begs the question, what is she doing? Because, you know, I agree.
She's like a secretary or something.
Watto's
like,
par.
Watto, you have Shimi an appointment speaking. Later today. Or like, yeah.
Right. Watto's par. Shimi speaking. How can I help you today? Yeah. I don't know. But it definitely, it's interesting to think that she was a slave first with Garada the Hutt, and then she was lost in a bet to Watto, and that's where we kind of meet them in Phantom Menace.
But did she have Anakin before the trade or after the trade?
And that's never been kind of tied down. Like, that's, I would assume after, because Anakin mentions to, was it Qui-Gon or to Padme that, you know, they were sold to Watto from Garada the Hutt. Like, that's where we learn about that.
Wasn't it Gardilla the Hutt?
Gardilla. Yeah, it is Gardilla. Sorry. Gardilla the
Hutt. It's these weird things that I remember. I don't know.
It's like, it's also like the names too. You know, it's like,
yeah, right.
Gardilla the Hutt.
Well, and I can also just
Gargonzola
hear,
the Hutt, you I can, know.
I can hear Jake Lloyd saying it, and I think that's part of it.
Yeah. Oh, so. Man. Jake Lloyd had some of the best lines in The Phantom Menace. I'm sorry. I'm a
when
person
you say best,
in my name.
Do you mean like worse?
No, I mean like or... I love him. Like, I'm a person and my name is Anakin. Like, that
no,
is like,
oh my
so
gosh,
iconic.
The first time, like
it just beats.
Isn't
the
he
character.
Supposed to be like when Padme walks in, he's supposed to like completely fall in love with her, and he's just like, "Are you an angel?" I'm like, oh my gosh.
I don't like, hear he quite face. Sounded like that though.
It's like, child, that. Calm down.
She's like, you know what?
But that's the point. It's like, oh man, I see Jake Lloyd had some of the best lines because like they're the best ones to quote because everyone just laughs about them because right. You know,
I just feel like 9-year-olds aren't supposed to flirt with 14, 15, 20 year olds. I don't know. Like, how old was she?
She was 14 at the time.
Just so, 14.
Yeah. Older still... to know better.
Yeah, right. It's only like 5-year difference.
Also, but... I still don't understand how they fell in love when Obi-Wan was right there.
Maybe Obi-Wan was like the first to ship it.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'll just stand back and I'll watch this and maybe it'll go okay. I don't know.
And it,
but,
oh man. You know. And it, yeah, let's get back on Shmi here. Let's get back on Shmi. All right. We're going to go back to Shmi. So the next big thing that happened in her life that we know about, that Watto did sell her. So after she left being Watto's secretary, you know, Watto sold her to Kleeg Lars, which we know, you know, that's, we find out in that in Attack of the Clones, that Kleeg then freed her and married her. This has always kind of troubled me, like this concept of like he freed her, then married her. Do you think he fell in love with her before and then that's why he purchased her to free her? Or do you think he's like, I need a wife. Oh, you'll do. And he bought her and then like forced her to marry him. Like,
what if we had like a Beauty and the Beast situation where like he needed a slave and then like. Also held. Didn't he like wait he's the one who doesn't have a leg, right?
Yeah, well he doesn't have a leg because he got injured trying to find her going out to the
okay well
the
then
Tusken
he legitimately
Raiders.
Cares about her, that's good.
Well yeah. And I read somewhere that he actually fell in love with her before he bought her.
See, I would believe that. My only concern is like you have to remember because all the novels and everything were kind of no longer canon, it's kind of hard to say like what really is there or not anymore, because anything that was written about that time is no longer considered canon. But yeah, so Kleeg Lars freed her and married her, and it just always seemed kind of weird. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well,
like,
maybe it's the case where like he bought her and then like he never had her as a slave. Like, as soon as he brought her back to the moisture farm, he's like, oh, by the way, you're free. And
or he just,
like,
I would assume he just freed
you.
Her.
I don't know.
Well, I think he probably fell in love with her beforehand. Like, I can imagine.
It's like they went on a date to the Tashi station and, and had a
power
had
converters.
A power converter. They talked about power converters and they were like, yep, you're the one for me.
Well, and Watto probably sold her if he was low on money because he no longer had Anakin to make repairs. Maybe that was true. One of his things where he sold her to get money to. Even
yeah,
eat.
I can see that. Like, him just getting rid of her. At the same time, like, I feel like he probably, like, in my mind, so here's Mikey's headcanon for Shmi Skywalker and Kleeg Lars. You know, Shmi is walking back from a day at Watto's junkyard after being on the phones all day, and Kleeg sees her, and it's love at first sight. And she's like, no, I can't fall in love. I'm a slave. And he's like, well, then I'll free you. And so now Kleeg has this long journey of trying to save up money so he can buy her freedom so they can get married and have a wonderful life together. only to be her taken by Tusken Raiders and die. But really, like,
now that's a Valentine's Day card.
There it is. See, I set you up for that, Ben. It was good. Yeah,
right. Totally.
But yeah, yeah. But yeah, so absolutely. Like, here's the thing. It's like, I can imagine someone like falling in love and then working their way to free somebody. It's really difficult in my mind to believe that he freed her and then married her, like kind of forced her. Like, I don't see it like a Russian mail order bride type thing. Maybe they don't really have Russian mail order brides in England, Anya, do they?
Yes. Okay. Oh my god.
I don't know. Like, I just, I'm not going to get into conversation. Anyway, but yeah, like, I just can't imagine it being something like that. So I feel like it had to be a good kind of like him freeing her, like being the knight in shining armor. You guys would agree?
I mean, it's a little troubling if it isn't that way, if it was literally another way of enslaving her, mm-hmm. almost. And it's significantly more troubling to do it that way. So the fact that there isn't that explicitness to it for how it happened is actually something that I really, really don't like about the prequels. It's like one of those things where I'm like, you know, this is the sort of thing where you need to actually lay out how this happened a little bit more clearly, because, you know, leaving that open to interpretation is not good, because the connotation of it is really, really bad. Like, it's at worst physical and emotional manipulation into a far worse situation, because then there's this idea of, if she's married to him, there are certain expectations of what that means. Whereas if she was a slave with certain responsibilities, that expectation to be in a physical or romantic relationship with someone isn't there, and there's no obligation to that if she's been, and it even sounds terrible, if she's been purchased for a different
means. I don't think that's the case, yeah. Only because, like, in Attack of the Clones, I feel like, I mean, George Lucas went to, like, a pretty good, like, I mean, he has that whole monologue where, like, you can tell he actually legitimately cares about her. And I think that was probably the scene where he's like, okay, here's where we're going to show them that, like, this guy is genuine.
Yeah, because he hurt himself.
That scene is really heartfelt. Yeah, like, he hurt himself trying to save her, but also just, like, the way he talks about her is very, I don't know. It's just, it's really heartfelt. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know, this guy, his feelings were legitimate. You know, I feel like,
well,
that was a scene that kind of
helped at the same, in filling at in the gaps. Same time, you also have to remember that even Klieg aside, you know, Owen, his son, not through Shmi, you know, Obi-Wan left Luke in their care. Like, if they were bad people, like slavers and, you know, stuff like that, like, you think Obi-Wan would have sensed it, but at the same time, like, I guess Dumbledore left Harry with the Dursleys at the same, you know, like, he doesn't necessarily mean they're going to put him with someone good. Yeah, and that's
weird, because, like, Harry turned out okay, and Luke was, like, a whiny dork.
You want to go to Tosche Station? But I want to say it's the good one. Like, I want to say it's the, you know, yeah. I feel like there's a fan film in there called The Farmer and the Slave. You know, like, I feel like it's ready to be made.
I want to believe it that way, but what, like, I don't discount Klieg's feelings at all, but because it's not explicit on both sides, because it's not just the intent of one side that makes a relationship, it's both. So that's what I mean by, like, it should be slightly more explicit, like, how it came about.
So let's go back to Mikey's headcanon for a moment, okay? Oh, here, you know, right, come on, this is going to be good. This will be good. Watch. So imagine this.
Like a theme song. Welcome to Mikey's headcanon.
Exactly. No, anyway. So imagine this. You have Shmi Skywalker, whose son has done pod racing, and he left to be a Jedi Knight, and he's going to come back and free all the slaves, is what he told her, is like the last thing he said. You know, and he said, what does your feeling say? He's like, I'm going to come back, see you. Like, all these things, right? And then you have Klieg Lars, who is a moisture farmer. All right? So, like, those two things, completely different. You know, even though she's a slave, she had this amazing life even if it wasn't amazing, like, she has these stories. I can see, like, him falling in love with her, and then she being, like, the one to be able to, like, kind of lift him up a little bit, in the sense, like, oh, yeah, and Anakin did this, because they knew all about Anakin when he came. Like, they knew who he was. When Klieg and Owen and Beru saw Anakin, like, they knew who he was. Like, I had hoped to meet you someday, hopefully under better terms. Like, so, you know, Shmi had told them all about Anakin, who he was, and what she hoped he would be. So I can imagine them following, like, you know, them meeting each other, maybe as simple as, like, buying, you know, some kind of food at the market, and they just kind of slowly, you know, flirting, talking, and then they really fall in love. And so he does the thing. He's working as a moisture farmer. You know, he has to work, you know, live far away in Mos Eisley instead of Mos Espa, so that way he can go ahead and, you know, save up money to buy her from Watto. Like, I see that happening, and I'm gonna believe that to be what happened in Mikey's head canon. Again, if anyone wants to make the film The Farmer and the Slave, let me know, I'll help you out.
Well, and like, in the sense that like, he wouldn't have, like, because it's hard work being a moisture farmer, so like, for him to spend money on the slave, personally I would think that there would be more emotion to it, and that's why he used that money to kind of buy her out of slavery. But I think Danya's point is, like, we have this proof that Lars loved Shmi, but we don't have any anything in relation to her to him.
Yeah, that's where I'm getting held up. Like, it's perfectly fine on Klieg's part. Like, yes, there was love there, but we don't know Shmi's thoughts and feelings around that. We have no context for it at all.
Well, and
did she go along with it just to free herself?
No, and I agree with you on that. Like, I wish that was explicitly said. But, you know, the fact that she would talk about Anakin to not just Klieg, but to Owen and them, like, I feel like she would at least be comfortable enough. Like, even if she wasn't, like, 100% in love, she was at least comfortable with her situation, which is still bad, but I'm not going to believe that she was comfortable. I'm going to believe that she found love too. Like, that's what I want. That's what I want to believe, Danya. Don't take that away from me. I'm an optimist. Yeah,
I'm just putting out I'm being devil's advocate then.
I know you. I know you should, are, because I got Mikey's corner.
They should put
here
in, like, I don't know if this will never happen, but if George Lucas wanted to do some edits to Attack of the Clones, so that when Anakin goes to see her at the Tusken Raider camp, she's like, you know, dying, and then she's like, oh, by the way, he's a great guy, like, he's awesome, you know. We did all this great stuff
he's
together.
He's your stepfather now.
He's your stepfather,
catch.
And
play catch.
I really love him. And
she hands Anakin one of the Valentine's cards to hand
to
Lars when he gets back.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah. Anyway,
there we go.
All right, so let's continue moving through Shmi's life that we know on screen and kind of how it affected.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Okay,
wait.
All right.
So her last words are "I love," and then she dies. What if it was "I love Klieg"?
Oh,
and not "I love you," and then she dies.
But come there on, she's in Anakin's arms. She's in his arms. All
well,
right.
What if she likes? I don't know. She hasn't seen Anakin in like 10 years. She's been with Klieg for like, I don't know, a while. She'd probably think about him.
All right, let's move on. So Shmi was also the voice of reason between Qui-Gon and Anakin, when Anakin was so readily to help these strangers he never met, but he knew they were a Jedi because he saw, you know, Qui-Gon's laser sword. You know, they talked to, he talked instantly, you know, Anakin instantly, you know, offered himself to go ahead and help them with betting, but Shmi kind of brought out and said that yes, everything around here revolves around gambling. So she was more the level-headed one between her and her son, which makes sense, you know, since Anakin was 9 at the time. It was technically 10, right? 9 or 10. So, you know, she has this, you know, kind of subtle, like, she's willing to put her son in danger for the good of others. Like, you know, she even mentioned that she dies a little bit every time, you know, Watto makes him do it. But the fact that she's willing to let him and say, yes, you should do this, and she encourages him to do it, like, one, I think that's great. That's a good indicative of mother. She's always encouraging their son. But it's kind of interesting that she encourages her son to help some random strangers they never met, who I guess they did think that they were there to free the slaves when we find out that they're really not. But I don't know. What do you guys think about that interaction that she has, and she kind of encourages Anakin to go and put himself into mortal danger with the Boon to Eve Classic.
I think it's probably because she... Well, Qui-Gon wins her trust at some point. And I feel like something about him, like, lets her know that it's going to be okay.
Not a Jedi mind trick?
No, probably not, because, like, Anakin, like, admits in that conversation earlier that he, like, saw his lightsaber and knows that he's a Jedi or whatever. And I'm assuming Shmi's heard about Jedi before. And so, yeah, because, I don't know. It makes sense that she would say yes because there's reasonable hope that something good will come out of it.
And something good does come out of it in the end, you know. Qui-Gon does truthfully try to go ahead and free both of them, not just one. So, you know, it's one of those things, but he's only able to. And of course, he's going to choose Anakin, and not only for selfish reasons, because he really, Qui-Gon feels that Anakin is the chosen one, but also, like, you know, regardless of Shmi or Anakin got freed, you know, if Shmi was freed, that wouldn't change her, her lot in life at all, because she was free, because she wouldn't leave her son. You know, at the same time, and, like, honestly, any parent, I would say, would probably want their kids to have a better life. Like, that's what you always hear. Your parents will say, it's like, oh, I want you to have a better life and an easier time than I did. And I would say the same thing. You know, Shmi is helping her son do it because she believes that these outsiders are going to be the ones to help her son kind of make a difference in his life, to make a big change.
Right. And the scene at the, when Anakin actually does leave, I mean, she encourages him to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, he's the one who comes, and it's literally like, you know, Anakin can go, like, this is it, and she could, you know, break down and say, like, no, he's staying with me, but she actually just says, like, no. She says something like, don't look back,
yeah, or, like, says, don't be look brave back,
or whatever, yeah.
And you know, she even tells him to trust his instincts, you know, what does your heart tell you? You know, even though she has no training in the Force or anything like that, you know, she already believes in it, which I think we talked about, like, obviously the Metachlorian is a scientific communication with the Force, but at the same time, belief is enough, and I think she has that when it comes to the Jedi and kind of what they can do.
And maybe that's why the Metachlorians chose her to bear Anakin.
Come on, Danya, what's your thoughts on this?
Seriously, the, like, Immaculate Conception
nonsense?
Yeah, I was like, how can I say this without swearing? Because I mostly want to just swear.
What if it was Darth Plagueis the Wise, who can create life from nothing? Maybe Anakin was created by Darth Plagueis, or Snoke, if you will, from nothing. Why not? Dun, dun, dun.
But then why Shmi?
Why not? It's
she's like the last person people would expect.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, think about it. She's just a slave on Tatooine. She's a slave on a backwater planet of Tatooine. You know, it's not even owned by the Republic or anything like that. You know, you hear the Republic's laws don't come out here. So, you know, if you have this dark, you know, Sith Lord.
But certainly wouldn't you want to, if you were going to create life like that, wouldn't you be the one that would want control over that person carrying that child? So that you would then, when it is born, have complete and utter control over that child, where you could mold them into exactly what you need them to be. Wouldn't you want to be there?
Didn't Palpatine
from, like,
do that? Like, didn't he just leave it to Palpatine to do that?
See, again, here's the problem: is the Darth Plagueis. So here's the thing: Darth Plagueis novel, which is a phenomenal read. It is absolutely amazing. And it gives us a whole bunch of information about, you know, Shreve Palpatine before he became, you know, Darth Sidious and everything, is no longer canon. The only thing we have that is canon about, Plagueis, is the conversation in Revenge of the Sith between Anakin and Palpatine at the opera, talking about, have you ever heard the story of Plagueis the Wise? You won't hear this in the Jedi. You know, and he talks about how he was able to put a stopper in death and even create life. But in the end, he was killed by his, you know, his apprentice. Like, that's all we have about Plagueis that is officially canon right now. So
I thought it was implied that Palpatine was the apprentice who killed him, because he smiles when he says that.
Me too. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Well,
awesome. I'm not alone.
And in the book, that's what happened. But that's what happened.
And then the way it works out is, like,
it's not officially, you know.
Yeah, and I thought that's where the Snoke theory came from, because Palpatine says, like, oh, he could save others from death, but not himself, but, like, what if he did save himself from death and just waited until his foolish apprentice failed big time, and then was like, okay, by the way, I'm gonna take over
where you left off.
And look, because Anakin has a grandkid who's kind of susceptible to the dark side. I'm gonna pick him.
I agree with you, and I think that theory of Plagueis, because it's already canon and everything, just like would make so much sense. The problem with that is they've kind of retconned all the stuff that we had about Plagueis. Like I said, we don't officially know if Palpatine was the apprentice that killed Plagueis. It was written in the book, but it's not canon anymore.
Well, and I believe he is, as much as you believe Luke is Rey's dad. So
there we go.
I'm gonna stand behind that one.
Well, and then we know it's true. Then there we go. All right, moving on past that.
I never said that. I believe.
You can believe. You can believe what you want, but you know, Rey.
Yeah,
is,
well, you know, it's fine.
We'll wait till anyway. Okay,
he's actually Luke's dad.
Yeah. Oh God.
We'll just.
All right. So obviously there she is. So she has the Immaculate Conception, Danya. I know, and it is a kind of interesting, something that George Lucas put in there. But I do want to talk about her death with Anakin. You know, we talked a little about this with Kleeg and her relationship to Kleeg, and she is gone and held captive for a month by the Tusken Raiders before Anakin gets there. And that's how long Anakin had been having those dreams. But I can understand why this would push Anakin towards the dark side, like as a step, because he's been having these dreams about his mother in pain and torture, right? And Yoda, Obi-Wan tells him to ignore his dreams, and that's one of those things where it's like, okay, I get it. My train says I should focus on the now and not everything else. But when he's finally away from them, he's like, I have to do this. And by the time he does, it's too late. And that's what leads him further down the dark side, because he really should have just followed his instincts, saved his mom, and she would have been happy. He would have had cousins, and like all these great things would have happened, I'm sure. His life would have been way different. Little Luke and Leia would have been happy with a dad and mom instead of, what happened. But, Mikey's headcanon here.
Okay.
He had these things for a month, and she survived a month in being tortured by the Tusken Raiders until Anakin was able to survive. Like, think of her will as a person to be able to survive that long
in the condition she was in. She didn't lose the will to live.
Yeah.
Padme.
Her heart was broken.
No,
it was Valentine's.
Whole like theory that Palpatine kills her?
Yes.
Like with the Force?
One thing I will say about that is that it is a genuine thing that can happen medically. Like, dying of... It sounds ridiculous, but dying of a broken heart is something that happens.
Right. Well,
look at Debbie Reynolds.
Hey,
yeah, exactly.
We know what we're talking about.
Lose the will to continue.
Yeah. Yeah.
It happens on a lot of occasions, usually when someone is either elderly and weak, or in this case, someone who just gave birth, so she is essentially bleeding still. Like, it's not so far beyond, belief that
she was choked.
Yeah, she was choked, she was injured already, she's having...
Yeah, what's the, I never understood after so many times of seeing that movie, what's the time, like, how much time takes place between when she's on Mustafar and when she gives birth?
Good question.
Because, like, you know what I mean? Like, she gets, like, choked to a point, and then, like, how long after that does stuff happen? Because, like, that same day is the battle between Obi-Wan and Anakin, which
it would
makes
be
me
well,
think-
let's put it this way. You have to think about how long did it take Obi-Wan and Padme to go from Coruscant to Mustafar? Like, you have to remember, like, we can't really take, light speed and how time actually is in there. Like, going from Tatooine to Alderaan is technically an 8-hour trip. 8 or 10 hours, I don't remember the math off the top of my head. So, like, obviously they're traveling for a distance. So really what happens is, as soon as Obi-Wan defeats Anakin, he picks up Padme, gets her into the ship, and then they fly to meet up with, Yoda and... and Bail Organa. So, like, that's where he meets, and that's when the children are born. So, like, it's within, I would say, an hour or two. And she's still recovering from being choked and hurt and everything.
Right.
So,
but you know, by the time Anakin asks Palpatine, like, is she okay? She is dead at that point.
Yeah.
So somewhere the timelines cross again, and that's where I get confused.
Yeah, but like he could have, like, he got all in that suit and stuff. And when he finds out, it doesn't necessarily mean it was in a short period of time after she died. It could have been days or weeks.
Yeah, like think about how long. Like he was a burn victim, you know, with arms and limbs cut off, right? You know, he's. You know, we see him still taking back to baths in Rogue One, and that's 20 years, you know, 17, 19 years after. 19 years after, you know, those events. And so it's one of those things. So, like, obviously, for him to be saved, you know, by Palpatine, you know, he flew from Mustafar back to Coruscant, you know, which we'll say is a couple hours. And then the droids had to, you know, repair him, which might have been a couple hour thing. So, you know, we'll say it's probably, what, 8 hours have passed by the time he's able to, like, stand up. And then he asks the first question, and then he goes, no! I was leaning up to that. I really wanted to say no.
Yeah, that's, you know, you can tell.
Yeah. But yeah, like that's probably where that is, you know. But, you know, with
Padme, I just wish dying, there was a moment when, like, she and Leia could have locked eyes, so that moment in Jedi could make sense.
Yes.
She's like, oh, she was very beautiful. Like, well, if we just had Leia see her once or something. And then, because, like, maybe the Force made a memory in her as a very, very small newborn. And then she's like, oh, yeah, just images, really. And I'm like, well, that makes sense if you saw her. But I don't know.
Well, was Leia referring to her mom?
Like, yeah, because Luke says, do you remember your mother, your real mother?
Yeah, but
and so I'm assuming maybe.
Yeah, she was referring to her real mother.
Okay.
But, at the same time. And I think that Bail probably told her, like, he's like, just flashes, probably told her more about it, since we see how quickly she passed away. Obviously, she wasn't really around, like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, I don't know if Leia could actually remember Padme just because of how quickly she passed away, you know, at the age. But I think Bail probably let her know, because she did grow up in a better better environment than Luke did, with, you know, a loving mother and father. And she became essentially Princess of Alderaan and everything. Whereas Luke, not saying he didn't have a loving aunt and uncle, but they really were scared of him following in his father's footsteps, and they knew what happened to him. So he was just guarded by Obi-Wan, you know, put in a little bit deeper life. So I think Leia probably knew who her mother was. And it is referenced that she knew who her mother was in Bloodlines, the novel, and that she's found out everything she could about, you know, the senator from Naboo, and that's just like a small throwaway line. So I don't know if she knew how much before or afterwards.
And it could be like an imagined memory.
Yeah, like that's, you know, some people will
because
have
who's to say? Because she's force sensitive, we know that. So who's to say that what she intimately knows about her mother, even if it's just in flashes at that point, isn't something that that she has seen through the Force?
Yep,
right. That's what I was kind of filling in the gaps with originally, because I'm, you know, if we have a scene in the prequels where Leia's born and never sees Padme, I was like, well, okay, what's the one explanation we have left?
Midichlorians?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there we go. Awesome.
Yeah. Those gossipy midichlorians.
Alright, so I want to move on to the last bit. It was kind of Shmi's death and how it kind of had an effect on Anakin. Because he admitted that he regretted not being strong enough to save his mother to Padme, and he vowed he would one day become so powerful that he could learn to stop people from dying. Then he went into talking about how he killed them all, you know, like animals. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, that is his first step right there, like his self, not with Palpatine, but him first saying he's seeking power to prevent that.
That's like, that's the first time John Williams throws the Imperial March under Anakin.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it was right there in the entire clones.
So it's kind of like, you know, knocking you on the head, saying like, oh yeah, so remember Darth Vader?
Yeah, it's his first step towards that. But it's interesting that his first step was not being manipulated by someone else. his first step was purely him beating himself up for not being strong enough and wanting to seek more power
to prevent
that from happening.
It was the fear of losing loved ones.
Mm-hmm. Which leads pushed him further.
To the dark side.
Yeah. That fear, you know, fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. You know, Yoda said this right from the beginning. So I find that her death is so instrumental in the saga as a whole. You know, not only just the prequels, but also in the original trilogy. And even now, because you have someone like Kylo Ren, you know, idolizing, you know, Darth Vader. And there would be no Darth Vader if he didn't start down this journey that started with her passing. So Shmi Skywalker, you were a good mother. And unfortunately, you're the reason that millions of people died because of Darth Vader.
Now, hey, I'm gonna say no. Okay. That's not. No. I mean, come on. A lot of Anakin's story, I would say that losing Shmi and Shmi's death is the catalyst that made everything building up to that point tip over and push him further. I would say a lot of it is, yes, okay, losing his mother is difficult, but at this point, the primary driving force for him in order to seek out that power is making sure that he doesn't lose Padme. So he becomes singularly obsessed with the idea of never losing her. And he goes on that journey to get that power to stop that from happening. So I will not put that on Shmi at all. His resentment of, like, the Jedi Order and how it works and everything to do with that comes far before Shmi.
And it would continued afterwards, too.
Yeah,
all right. Palpatine. All right.
So I would say that it was almost a catalyst that basically pushed forward the fears that were already ingrained in him from basically falling in love and having those emotions and basically just the compounding of all of these emotions that he had anyway. So it basically just accelerated it rather than, because he would have got there eventually anyway. There was that manipulation going on in the background regardless, and those emotions were already within Anakin. So one way or the other, he was going to end up where he ended up.
Well, because not with just with Padme, but also when his children were born. Extra people to love and things to go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I don't know. I'm giving it a kind of a, I'm picking on Shmi just for the sake of moving conversation forward. Like, I am playing devil's advocate a bit there, and you know that. But I do want to mention that we did see her as a vision, if I remember correctly? I haven't seen
Illusion?
An illusion, I guess. Yeah, a vision or an illusion in season 3 of Star Wars The Clone Wars in the episode Overlords. She was the son had Anakin experience a force vision, a Shmi on the planet Mortis, which may or may not come up as a spotlight topic at some point in time. And it was really interesting that, like, even after the loss of his mother, he was forced to kind of confront her again, and just see how badly scarred he was, you know. But yeah, she definitely had an impact on his life, and not just his downfall, but just like everything that was to lead up to that, because he never let go. And that's interesting to think that if she had given him up, or if the Jedi had identified Anakin before, could he have had a completely different, you know, outlook or different experience as a Jedi? You know, the reason they take kids at such a young age is so that they have no attachment to the previous life. But we know that's not true. That didn't happen always, because even in Rebels, they talked about the first Mandalorian to become a Jedi. Obviously, if he's a Mandalorian, he knows about his past and everything, which we got just recently in Rebels there.
Yeah, and I mean, even when you look at Obi-Wan and Anakin's relationship, attachments are made regardless. Like, Obi-Wan and Anakin, that is love between the two of them. That is a familial, brotherly sort of love that they have for each other, which, again, is something that is discouraged by the Jedi Order. Like, they don't encourage love in any form. So the fact that that connection is there is, like...
Do you think the connection came about because of the circumstances of Obi-Wan teaching Anakin? Because the only reason that happened was because Qui-Gon died.
Yeah, he would have never been taught. The council had denied him.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it's Qui-Gon's fault.
Ah, you know, okay, very good.
Now, here's the so again, I'm throwing blame around, but we even talked about if Qui-Gon had been around, so maybe Qui-Gon wanted to train him because Qui-Gon knew he could train Anakin and be successful. But when he passed, you know, like that you know, there's no luck, you know, there's could roll the dice, see what happens. Like, they had no clue. It's definitely an interesting...
The compounding of that grief from Obi-Wan from losing Qui-Gon, because Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan had quite a close relationship as well. The grief that he very likely felt after losing Qui-Gon made it easy to, I guess, project onto Anakin a little bit, which almost, like, compounded that relationship, made it more of a relationship that I guess he poured himself into. But again, it's love, however you look at it.
Well, I hate to quote the prequels, but doesn't Anakin say something like they don't encourage love, but they encourage compassion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he says that.
It's hard to have one without the other.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's an interesting
take.
Yeah,
he also says, like, attachments, right?
Yeah.
Are forbidden. It's like the worst way to flirt too.
Yeah.
He's just looking at her and he's like, so attachments are forbidden, and she's like, really? And then, you know, what happened on Naboo, I mean, that meadow scene. Gosh. Those big they look like a cross between like a buffalo and a tick. Those animal things. Oh, what are they called?
Oh man. Now you're pulling up
my whole scene, that was rough, because she's like, oh, okay, yeah, attachments are forbidden. So
Did you want to come back to my place?
Yeah, right. He's like, no, I can't. Literally. I hate sand. But
is it a shack? Yeah, it was a shack.
The love shack.
Yeah, oh my god. Yeah, it's S-H-A-A-K-S. Shacks were a species of non-sentient herbivores that graze the grasslands of Naboo.
They trample Anakin's occasionally.
Yeah, they trample Anakin's occasionally. All right, I have two last things to kind of put out there. The first one was a rhetorical question. Where did Shmi get such an awesome last name? Skywalker. Like, come on, that's a pretty cool name, right?
Oh, yeah. So, George Lucas gave it to her.
Okay.
That's why I put rhetorical question, because I knew I was going to get an answer
right,
like that.
All right. So, speaking of George Lucas giving it to her, again, just to talk about Mikey's headcanon. Just to talk about Mikey's headcanon, the farmer and the slave, there is a link that I'm going to put in the show notes that we're going to post. I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen George Lucas in Love, the short film by Joe Nesbaum, since we've talked about spoof films earlier.
The title does not incline me to want to.
Oh no, this film is amazing. It's a great, it's an 8-minute short. Like, it's really worth watching. It's on Vimeo and YouTube, but it's actually really good. It's an 8-minute short. Basically, just to give you an idea, this is a spoof film by Joe Nesbaum, and it's a film that is following George Lucas while he's in film school, and he's got writer's block, and he falls in love with someone with a very familiar hairstyle that helps him write a script, because the best stories are right in front of you. So, like, the best part of this is, like, he sees two people on, like, they're riding bicycles, and then he's like, oh, and then that's where the speeder bike, you know, scene comes from. You know, like, all these little things. Like, there's a guy, like, on the, you know, on the quad eating pizza, just kind of a big blob, and he does the ho-ho-ho laugh. You're like, oh, there's Jabba the Hutt. Like, it's a fun film to watch. It's a short, it's 8 minutes, an independent film, since we talked about the other spoof films, and then we talked about, you know, Mikey's headcanon, the farmer and the slave. I think of it, it would be kind of like George Lucas in Love. So take a look at that if you get a chance.
So, Pizza Hut?
Anything else about Shmi Skywalker Lars, anybody? Alrighty. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Let us know what you think about, you know, George Lucas and love, or you think of Mikey's idea, Farmer and the Slave. As always, I am Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
Oh, is that me? I'm Ben.
And I'm
sorry.
Oh, boy.
Gosh, we planned that, too.
As always, may the force be with you.
And also with you.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.